The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Very sad to hear there about the death of Colm Keane. Colm, like, he was a great broadcaster for starters. There's fantastic music interviews he used to do with various stars from the 60s, 70s, that kind of thing. They're lying around somewhere in the RT archive, I think, because he told me before he digitised a lot of them before he left here. And then he wrote these books that were about kind of things you didn't think you might be interested in, like Padre Pio and near-death experiences and all that. But they were really good. They were kind of almost gossipy. Like, he was a great storyteller, and he did a few books with Una in recent years, and the St. Bridget one was just out recently. And, you know, life kind of threw a lot of sadness at Colm and Una, and their son Sean died in 2007, and then Colm had cancer for years. And I would say from the outside, it wasn't so much that he battled cancer for years, but he kind of tried to outwit it or something. But I'm sure there was a battle going on there privately, and it got him in the end. But you know what? He always carried it all with such great grace. He was fundamentally a really cool guy. And I'm sure I speak for everyone here in RT and for lots of people around the country in offering my condolences to Una and all his family and friends this morning. Now, look, on an upbeat note, and Colm Keane was a great man for the upbeat note, there's a nice text here from Breda McGuire in Dublin. She says, I want to smile at a stranger, lunch and laugh with friends unapologetically, delete Zoom, wear red hot lipstick, dance at a big Irish wedding, skip the queue, sit in a snug in a pub, sing along shoulder to shoulder at a gig in a muddy field, hug and hold a hand of a friend in need, the simple things in life, bright days coming in 2022. And oddly enough, in a strange way, I think I have the perfect person for us to talk to for the moment that we're in right now. Ruby Wax, good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I don't use the word fine, but if you want me to say it, I'll say it.
No,
I'm fine.
No, I was actually asking you for real. How are you? How are you really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You really want to know?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. My cat died yesterday. So, you know, I'm not fine, but I'm happy to do the interview. Okay.
Okay. Let's I'm really sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
And I know it's a big, I'm not an animal person. It's a big thing for people when their animals die, isn't it? It's almost like a death in the family.
I didn't know it would be. I mean, you know,
really,
we project so much on these animals, but, you know, in case you hear a little glitch in my voice, and I know in Ireland you're pretty astute, I just thought I'd tell you why I sound like this. I'm in a lower key.
Okay, well,
but
look,
let's talk about being in a better mood.
Exactly.
I'm sorry to hear
about that. And we'll talk about survival strategies and everything. Listen, one thing I think we're all noticing here. I know you've kind of similarly had the easing of all the restrictions together over in the UK. As we come out of it even a little bit, we're suddenly starting to see more clearly how mad we all went in different ways in the pandemic and in the lockdowns. Did you go a bit mad in any ways?
Well, you know, to be honest, I was running something called Frazzle Cafe every night, which is my baby. It's a charity where it used to be in person. It was in cafes, and I was emulating AA a little bit. But just for people who are frazzled, which is everybody, you know, meaning that we got those voices telling you you're not good enough, blah, blah, you know, you're a failure. And I, in a lot of my books, I explain why we think more negative than positive. So we really have to make a concerted effort to change those, you know, those thought patterns. But, you know, that's my obsession. So for me, you know, I would hear a kind of cross section of the public every night because, you know, they'd come on and I'd say, don't give me the, you know, everything's fine, blah, blah, blah. And I said, just give me the weather condition in your mind. So for me, I had community during lockdown. You know, I always wanted religion or a neighborhood. So with these cafes, it really made me feel connected to something. So that got me through. And I wrote a book called Mindfulness Guide for Survival out of it. It's kind of interactive book, taking in consideration what the problem was during lockdown, which is exactly what you're saying. We were slapped in the face by reality and we had no distractions. And so ultimately the horror of horrors is now people have to face reality, which for some reason we avoided. I mean, you know,
was
not
that
being
it?
A little general. Well,
all the props were taken away.
props were taken away. So now we got to face loneliness. I was lonely before the pandemic, you know, and we had phones, we had emails, we had, 24-hour deliveries, so we could distract ourselves, and suddenly you're stripped during lockdown. And boy, is that a wake-up call. And of course, now we call it trauma, but for some people, this is a pretty, it's a time to evolve. It's almost a gift to say what really matters. Who do you really like? Do you really like the choices you made? And this is for people who are lucky enough to have shoes. You know what I'm saying? There's people who just need to survive. So I'm being a little elitist. But I think that lockdown was a time to recognize what you need for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying what an interesting time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I'm just going to say, for people who've missed the last 20 years and are wondering why I'm talking to the comedian Ruby Wax about the meaning of life, you are now an expert in it. You're a big advocate of mindfulness. You're an activist around mental health and everything. I want to go back to, though, something you said there about loneliness. And we'll talk about you being lonely before the pandemic in a sec, but you have another new book out as well, which is
called
Now for the Good News, right? But in the first chapter, you say very bluntly at the start of the first chapter, the biggest cause of emotional pain in the Western world, and I think this is very germane right now to all of us, is loneliness.
Well, I don't think anybody would argue. You know, there used to be community. Well, in Ireland, you probably have it, and neighborhoods and big families. But for most of it, that's stripped away. So, you know, we have Twitter, where I would say it's like sitting in the darkness, sending out a flare from the sinking Titanic. You know, it's a cry for help. So we have everything at our fingertips, but you know, we're still by ourselves. You know, and so I wrote this new book called "And Now for the Good News." I wrote it before the pandemic, by the way, because I didn't want to get caught in this fulcrum of saying the future's, you know, nothing's going to go well. Meanwhile, I think that does come out of loneliness, is if you're bleak, you think the world is bleak. And so I intentionally went to see where businesses were flourishing, how they're doing education now for kids, you know, teaching them empathy, what's coming up in tech. And I call it the green shoots. So I have to say, for 2 years of doing this research, you know, going to schools in, I think there were even in Ireland, and there were communities, let's say in disadvantaged neighborhoods, let's just go to education, where
can we
these
come
kids...
Ruby, can we come back to education in a second? Because I do want to talk to you about
it. Oh, yeah,
sure. Can I stick on...
Anyway, what I did was, when I was in these businesses, one thing they have all in common is teamwork.
Yeah.
And so people, if they're happy, they don't care about profit and targets. People really want to be liked.
They just want to...
Yeah, they want community, so... There you go. That's the theme of all of the chapters.
Yes, yes. And then, like, you have an interesting story in that respect yourself, in that you say you were lonely before the pandemic. But so you have this whole arc that you went through of that you were craving acceptance as a kid and developed this persona to be accepted. But somehow that prevented you from connecting with people. Just talk me through that.
Well, I would say I'm extreme, and please believe that not all comedians are mentally ill, because it's 1 in 4 and they're not that many funny people. But, you know, if you come from, we don't have time, a background of such dysfunctionality that I wrote 50 years ago, I wrote 20 years ago, it was the story of my family, which is so dark. It's probably really, you know, in Ireland, they probably think it's a sitcom. But Carrie Fisher was my editor, and she said my family's almost as bad as hers. So that's a good review.
Yeah.
They were so crazy, these people, my mother and father, but they didn't know any better. So nuts that it turned into comedy. And I could use that, for creating this kind of dark slant on life. I don't want to thank him. I rather would not have had the mental illness, but it certainly... shape my talent, let's just say. And it still means whoever I am never came to the surface, but boy, did I have acceptance. On the other hand, if you're not available and you're hiding behind the armor, it's still pretty lonely. But bully for me, I made some cash out of it. You know?
So that kind of brash American who arrived over in the UK, Ruby Wax, that was all a construct, was it?
Well, it worked for 25 years.
Yeah. Did it work for you, though?
You know, You know, when you're really young, it really works for you. It's like you can take the speed, you can take drugs, you can take drink because your body's resilient. So I didn't care. You know, I saw myself on TV recently and part of me thought, wow, she's lucky. She suddenly made friends for people who would have rejected her in high school. You know, it's a very needy personality who happened to get her own show. And because I'm funny, I got away with it. You know, otherwise you just see neediness that last 10 minutes. So yeah, it worked. It doesn't work when you're in your 40s. P.S. It just becomes tragic. And fame really leads to distress. So I'm not saying don't go near it, but luckily when I got fired from TV because I did a horrible thing, I turned 50. At least I took a leap, like my parents taught me how to immigrate, you know, because they were refugees. So I jumped into my fascination with how the mind works. Now, that isn't a bad career move. And I turned that into books and comedy. And, you know, it's really how the mind works. So I went to Oxford and I took my master's and twisted it into comedy. And that's how I wrote the last five books, except the one that's just come out now. That's just pure research on what the good news is around the world.
Yeah.
But it made me happy. And that's all I care about.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, you got to do what you got to do to survive and to make things work for you. And I saw you say now that speaking of community and everything, that in a way then you've discovered that your community and your tribe are kind of psychiatric patients, the people with mental health issues, that they're your people and you get them and they get you.
Well, that's kind of true. I mean, let me just say, when I meet people who are frazzled, that is not mental illness.
Yeah.
Okay, that's just stress about stress. Okay, that's the public, and that's not our fault. It's kind of the culture's kind of gotten ill. But mentally ill people, I perform my first shows just in institutions, and they were the most fun I had because I get it. You know, we do. It's like any minority, we speak the same language.
Yeah.
So. I'm writing a book now, my next one, which I'm researching is about finding meaning. So I work at refugee camps. P.S. These are my people because I'm a refugee. I get it.
Yeah,
I get
yeah.
what they're going through. I get a psychiatric ward. We clap eyes on each other and I get it. You know, I know.
Broken people,
and they
know broken people straight away, don't they?
Sure. And then the Queen gave me an award for being mentally ill. So I must have picked the right disease. She gave me an OBE.
It's interesting what you say about the frazzled, though, that that's not mentally ill. And the frazzled cafe is not for people who would identify as mentally ill. But do you not think that there is a whole load of people out there who are just mentally healthy enough, maybe, or just not mentally ill enough, who are the walking wounded of mental health? The people who are frazzled, who don't have a diagnosis or anything, but who need to help themselves.
I think that because of the way we lived before, which is revering success and revering being busy and competing with each other, who was the most stressed, we had a little backwards. I could give you the history of it, but we don't have time. Because in the 50s, people all the way up till then just accepted what they had. You know, you were a peasant. Okay, it wasn't great, but that's what you were. And so people had lives. And then suddenly, you know, we had, I don't know if you know Gordon Gekko from Wall Street.
Of course,
and he said, greed is good, and everybody cheered. You know, Darwin didn't mean, when he said survival of the fittest, that the killer, you know, the most greedy would win. He meant those who cooperate best. It just got misinterpreted. And so we're back to it. We need each other. Human beings were born to bond. And there's a chemical that's released when our hearts touch each other. That's the antidote for stress. So if you just fake it, you know, to be kind to somebody, even if you don't feel it, actually, it's pretty good for your health. And that's sort of why I wrote that book. And now for the good news, because I was with people who switched that thing on in me. And I went, look how they're educating kids. And it really touched me. So I don't go, oh, it's all a disaster. What do I do about my kid? I kind of know what to do with your kid because I went to go see where it works. So take some of those ideas and bring it home.
Yeah. My favorite thing in the whole book, Ruby, is a guy called Anthony Seldon. He's a former headmaster.
Yeah.
Is that right? And his rules for life. Do you remember offhand what they are? I have them written down
here. No, you tell me.
Okay.
Tell me.
Listen to this. Now, I think I'm going to blow this up and put it up on the wall. Stop worrying, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the best one. Happiness is the opposite of selfishness. We'll come back to that. Learn from experience. Be yourself. And his final one, and again, I think it's a good one, live by water. by which he means, I presume, live near a big body of water, not live on water. Happiness is the opposite of selfishness. That's so kind of
that's pretty
arresting,
good, yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It, well, you know, that's why we were lonely, is because it was each man for himself and nobody felt good enough. And I'm not going to knock social media. We need it. We need technology. But if you're comparing yourself with the rest of the world, mm-hmm. somebody who's more beautiful and more successful, it's gonna break you. And it makes us selfish. You know, it makes us grab what we've got and want more. And that's a human addiction, is this endless need for more. And now we kind of know, or a lot of us know, that these guys who've got it all don't have anything. Yep, selfishness, the opposite, is he's got it. It's bullseye, but how you get happy. And that's my mission, is how do you do that? You know, you don't just send a greeting card saying get well soon. Because if we know how to do it, everybody'd be happy. So clearly there's something wrong in the atmosphere or somewhere. And that's why we have the walking wounded. And I would say that's the whole population, except there's a few people who are blessed, right? They probably live in the country. They're probably in Ireland. They're meeting at the pub. They have their support system. So don't read my books, because you're fine. And don't come on frazzled.
And listen, you would say that the way to find happiness is you put a lot of store in mindfulness, don't you?
I do, and we wouldn't really need mindfulness if we had still religion in the good sense, or town hall meetings, or big families. Mindfulness, nobody can afford a therapist anymore, P.S. So mindfulness has been stolen from something around 2,500 years. It is disciplining the mind to be able to cool itself down when all around you is chaos. And it's the ability to focus on what you want to focus on and not get dragged away to distraction. So I miss my kids' childhoods because I was on the telephone. Had I focused, and now I can, well, that's a source of happiness. Or I went where people made me happy. When you're in a a hurricane of distractions and looking for things that might make you happy, as advertisers show you, oh, you buy this, you'll be happy. It's bullshit. Okay, happiness comes from inside, and I think for me, mindfulness is a root.
Okay, have you managed to settle yourself and your brain and your life and your
I mean, I'm still upset about yesterday. You know, mindfulness doesn't make you blank. You still feel sadness and anxiety and whatever. But here's what you don't do. You don't get frazzled. So I don't get stressed about stress or depressed about depression.
Okay.
It's the second layer that kills you.
Okay. So it's about sitting back and accepting that there is a bad feeling passing through, but knowing it will pass as well, I guess. Yeah.
Listen, going back. Exactly.
Yeah. Sorry,
and your whole body isn't sad. There's bits of you. It's a weather condition. It'll move.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry,
listen,
sorry.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have interrupted you. But going back to the education, the big thing I took out of the book is that I should probably move to Finland to get my kids educated. And they do seem to have it sorted in Finland, don't they? But the really arresting thing about it is you go to a teacher's house and he's got an amazing house because the teacher is rich.
They pay the teachers more than almost any other job. But again, I've seen in the UK, I didn't go to Ireland for this, but there's a school called Reach 2, and there's lots of them. I just happened to go there. And again, the purpose of the book is take the ideas. So there was a kid, these aren't rich people, right? There's a kid, and the teacher makes sure that the kid knows there's no such thing as a stupid question, because those are the kids that think out of the box. So don't force feed your kids, you know, to study what they're going to study. If their brain can cool down and they do teach methods of self-regulation, those kids know when they're frazzled and they also know how to get themselves back down. So like a little kid who was very disturbed came up to me in the beginning of when I was in these schools and said, you know, I'm feeling really nervous. And that made me cool down because I went, oh, I'm nervous too. So rather than think he hates me, we both knew our temperatures. And then he takes me by the hand and shows me classes where they learn how to try and imagine what it's like in another kid's mind. Yeah. So they see the bully, they don't pull out their, you know, their spears and try to attack him. They try to see, how does that kid see the world? And they know by calming themselves down, okay, that we work like neural Wi-Fi. They calm the other kid down. And they learn mentalization, how to read people's faces. They, you know, they study, if I said something to hurt this person, how do I go back? You don't just say you're sorry, but they give methods. They teach them empathy.
Amazing
now, if
stuff.
You've got if you've got that up, so you don't have to go to the schools or go to Finland. Just take some of the ideas and bring them home.
Yeah.
But parents have to know they can't teach their kids this if they're not walking the talk. So the parent needs to learn either through mindfulness, and there's other ways, how to not project their feeling of failure onto their kid, which a lot of parents do. They think,
I
didn't make anything. I want my kid to be a success. Well, now they're not going to be a success. You're just burning their brains out. So you can teach them stuff, but first they have to understand how to get the stress down. And it doesn't help by you putting more stress on them.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, lots of words of wisdom here, Ruby. I'll be listening back to this afterwards. Listen, there are a lot of people texting in to say to commiserate with you on your cat. Here's one you won't want to hear. One woman says, "Please pass my regret on to Ruby at the death of her cat. I lost my own cat in 2014, and I still miss him. So 8 years on."
Oh.
Someone else texts to say, "Ruby Wax's series where she looked back in her chat show was really fascinating, and she did with that analytical point of view. What was it like going back? Because that was the old Ruby, wasn't it? It was the brash, needy person and everything. But you did, for people who don't remember, it was in the 90s. You were the first one of those people doing kind of those no holds barred, hanging around with people and really getting inside them. And there was Pamela Anderson, Donald Trump, OJ, all kinds of people. What was it like going back to that, Ruby?
Well, you know, first of all, I could go stay with him for a week, so it looks more brash. You know, nobody's going to let you go through their closet.
Yeah.
I would befriend them. So I'm with O.J. Simpson. I'm with, you know, Madonna. I'm not with them for a half an hour. So you're creating a relationship. And when it, like Carrie Fisher, when it works, we fell in love. We stayed friends for 35 years. And Goldie Hawn, when it crashes, and those made me wince, with Donald Trump or with Bill Cosby, these guys are sociopaths. I should have known that. I would know that now. And I would just cool myself down and be able to let them hang themselves. And instead, I got nervous. I started asking stupid questions. And I felt like I was with my dad, who was an abuser. And you shouldn't do that. You know, I mean, it happened. I watched myself. I cringed. But when I was with some of the girls, I thought that neediness works because they're needy, too. And right after the interview, we stayed together for 30 years. So it works and it doesn't work. You know, that whenever I was with somebody like Trump or OJ or whatever, you get their disease. You know, as I said, we pass our states to each other and they pass their neurosis onto me, and it doesn't feel good. It doesn't matter. It's still good TV and I got paid. So, you know, that's looking back. I thought, boy, was she good in her 20s. But luckily she reinvented, because now that doesn't last. That becomes obnoxious when you get older, you know, when you imitate who you used to be. So luckily I got fired, because I wouldn't have gone to Oxford if I wasn't fired or got my OBE or studied mindfulness. Why would you do that if your career is going well? And then suddenly you're old and you think this is desperate, because now they're putting you on reality shows. And that sounds good to some people. It ain't good when you're 50.
No, as you said earlier, tragic. It would have been tragic. It all worked out perfectly for
me.
But you know what? You know what I love is that, and at the time you weren't too thrilled about losing that slot. But and this is so honest and so kind of it's petty, and I'm quite a petty person. I love this. For a long time, you blamed Louis Theroux because you felt he swooped in and took over doing your kind of gig, but in a different way.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't allow his name to be mentioned in my house. It was from Verboten, and I didn't see a show until the day he interviewed me. I thought, maybe I better watch this. And, you know, what can I say? There's always somebody behind you, but he turned out to be the nicest man I've kind of ever – well, he tried to get – he said, "You've got to go back on TV." I said, "Louis, read my lips. I don't. And if I did, it'll create another disease." But he was so sweet, he kept emailing. And I said, "Boy, are you one of the nicest people I ever met in this industry."
So all those years resenting him, and all it took was sit down with him and the healing happened.
And I knew it was going to be closure in one way or another, because when I started talking to him, I had I'd work with some people to cool my engines down. Otherwise, I would have been taking out my anger on him. So I was very clear and said, here's what your image did to me. It's not you. And he was so shocked that the interview wasn't somebody going, anyway, blah, 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 whatever he thought. And he became real with me. You know, I said, this isn't you. I projected this on you. I felt like when you took my job, which probably you didn't, my kids would starve. It was so primitive. And also being usurped by a man, it reflects my childhood in a way, which I said was abusive. I said, but this has nothing to do with you. This is my story. And he listened and was really sweet. He didn't go, oh, shut up and be the brash American.
Yeah.
So it was human to human. And boy, do you have to admire somebody for being able to, well, like you are, you know, to be real. I'm funny when I'm funny. And when I'm not, please go with me. Otherwise, you know.
Ruby Wax, I have to say, you know, I think celebrity does make most people kind of slightly sociopathic and mad. You are one of the most authentic people I've ever had the pleasure to interview. It's all there and I loved it. We have to talk again, okay?
I think so. Yeah. I hope I come. That's my favorite place. I want to tour Ireland with a new show, but I haven't got one yet.
Okay,
so.
Well, you come over. I'll follow you around, okay? And lots of texters really enjoyed it. Brendan, thanks for the Ruby Wax interview. Listen to this, Ruby, from Breda. It reminded me of what is important in life. And Ruby, could you have done anything better for listeners today than that? And
thanks, Brendan.
The book, Ruby, is called And Now for the Good News, and it's published by Penguin Life. Ruby Wax, thanks a million.
Thank you. Thank you, Brendan. Thanks.
Email brendan@rte.ie.